Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Cyient Q4 FY 2018 earnings conference call hosted by Edelweiss Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal from Edelweiss Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Hi. Thanks, Rayo. Good evening to everyone. On behalf of Edelweiss, let me welcome you to the Cyient quarter four FY 2018 earnings call. We have with us the senior management of Cyient, headed by Mr. B.V.R. Mohan Reddy, along with senior members of the management team. Without further ado, I will hand over the call to Mr. Ajay Agarwal to start the proceedings. Thanks, and over to you, Ajay.
Thank you, Sandeep. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Cyient earnings call for fourth quarter of financial year 2018, ending March 31st, 2018. I am Ajay Agarwal, CFO. Present with me on this call are our Executive Chairman, Mr. Mohan Reddy, and Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Krishna. Before we begin, I would like to make the customary statement that all the statements made in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in this regard is available in our investor update, which has been emailed to you and is also posted on our corporate website. This call will be accompanied with earnings call presentation. Details of the same have already been shared with you. I now invite Mr. Mohan Reddy to provide a brief overview of company's performance for the quarter and the year ended March 31st, 2018.
Thank you, Ajay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Before Krishna and Ajay make the presentation, let me break some brief remarks on our performance for Q4 as well as the financial year 2018. Both of them, the Q4 performance as well as the FY 2018 performance, was in line with our expectations, both in terms of revenue as well as margin. Our revenues have grown to $607 million. It's a very strong growth, 12.9% in dollar terms, or 11.7% growth in constant currency terms. This should be observed across all the eight business units we have in the company. The operating profit for the year stood at 594.2 crores, which is a growth of 13.3% compared to the previous year. The net profit for the year was at 429.6 crores, a growth of 16.1% over the last year. We continue to have a healthy cash position. We now have 1,093.7 crores of cash. We also declared a final dividend, which is 4 rupees per share, which takes the total dividend for this financial year, or the financial year 2017-2018, to 13 rupees per share for the full year, which is the highest, and a comparable number to that, I believe, the previous year we declared 8 rupees per share. Coming to the financial performance of the quarter four of financial year 2018, the growth here too is strong across the board. We saw the quarterly revenue at $164.6 million, the highest ever in a single quarter, signifying a growth of 16.8% year-on-year, 8.3% quarter-on-quarter in dollar terms. All the eight business units had witnessed a similar growth year-on-year basis. The services revenue came up at $142.7 million, signifying a strong growth of 14.3% in year-on-year terms. Operating profit for the quarter stood at 1,492 million, or 149.2 crores, which is 19.6% growth on a year-on-year basis. We also saw our DLM, design-led manufacturing, having the highest ever quarterly revenue and the operating margin in the recent years. Net profit for the quarter stood at rupees 121.5 crores, with a growth of 16.2% year-on-year in 16.2% year-on-year terms over the last financial year. A few comments on the CSR. As a part of the ongoing CSR initiatives, we continue to support 25 government schools for education of the underprivileged children. As a part of our initiative to increase IT literacy, we have added one more science digital learning center, which now takes the total to 57. We've had several recognitions during the current quarter. Science was recently recognized by the Telangana government for the green initiative, wherein 6,000 samplings have been planted in our facility. On the award front, further, science obtained or science was recognized by the Boeing Supplier of the Year Award for the fourth time in a row, actually, it's a block of 6 years. On the infrastructure front, we moved two of our business units up to SEZ and set up a post-silicon validation lab in Hyderabad for a customer. We're also planning to expand our Pune facility to about 100 FTEs. On the operations front, signed and Google Aerosystems Limited of Israel signed an MOU to address the opportunities in the Indian UAV space and subsequently have entered into a joint venture on 11th of April 2018. We also became the founding member of Cryento India 2022 Consortium. This is a Government of India initiative to enable affordable medical facilities to wider section of the society. Science celebrated a 10-year partnership with IHS and 20 years as a global partner with ESRI Inc. Our IRIS certification was extended to comply with ISO TS 22163 2017 after a successful audit. With this, I would like to hand over this call to Ajay, who will take you over the details of the financial presentation, and thereafter, Krishna will talk about the business. Ajay, over to you.
Thank you, Mohan. Let me start with the revenue. As Chairman mentioned, this has been really a very well-rounded performance for us. We are all across the business unit, across all the 8 business units, as well as 3 geographies, we have seen the growth. And as we go forward, I think we are expecting the traction to continue across all the industries. In terms of the quarter, I would say that, you know, again, we clocked a good revenue of 164.6, which is the highest ever. Also, we had another milestone in terms of DLN, where we also did the highest ever revenue in the quarter. Here, I would like to just mention this revenue also includes both for the group and for the DLN, about $1 million of revenue from our recent acquisition called D&F that was acquired in January and it has been consolidated for 2 months. In terms of the income statement, I would say you would observe that, you know, we have a handsome growth of 13.3% during the year in the operating profit. In services, we continue to have good operating margin at about 15.4%. And overall, I think between the 2 years, we have improved the margin by about 60 basis points. So when we see internally, I think we see it as a good achievement, like in a situation where, you know, we had these wage hikes and not so many price increases coming from the customers. Our focus on operating profit and the drivers of it has really helped us. I would also like to mention the exit quarter margin for DLN is also the highest ever. We have clocked about 7%, and we are expecting the traction also to continue in case of DLN. In terms of the profit after tax, as we saw, we have delivered like-to-like growth of about 16% between the two periods. And in terms of other income, also we had a good quarter, but it's all between the treasury and the forward cover gains income. Tax rate, I would like to make a comment that the tax rate for the exit quarter, like-to-like, excluding runoff, is about 25%. And we do see with the focus on the SEZ, the whole of the new growth in business units we are planning for SEZ in the next year. And also, we are looking at the full year benefit of US taxation. So, definitely, we are looking at much reduced tax rate in the next year. In terms of quarter four, I think this was also on the expected lines. We did have in the services a margin of 15.2, but I would say that for all practical purposes, we are at about 15.7. We did have about 0.5% of some of the fixed costs that came at the year end, some of them driven by higher performance and order intake in terms of the sales commissions and some other variables. But actually, it's very nice that, you know, we are exiting service a business at a good margin. I already mentioned that in case of DLM also, we have done about 7% margin during the quarter. And I already mentioned about the tax, and the exit tax is about 25% on like-to-like basis, which is very gratifying. In terms of the cash flow, can you go to the next one? In terms of the cash position, as we already saw, we have good cash of about 1,097 million. This is after paying the dividend at the enhanced payout of about 40% for this year. We have also spent money on various investments during the period. You can see some of the numbers on this particular slide. In terms of our services business, we continue to have a good conversion of about 45%. And in case of DLM, we had extraordinary growth in between the two quarters, and because of that, we had consumed the working capital, so the free cash flow has been negative, but we are working on generating the free cash flow in case of DLM. In terms of the other income, if you see for the quarter, we have made 408 million of other income, and for the year 1489. This comprised of between treasury income, the realized gains on forward contracts, and other items. I would like to say that, you know, we continue to follow the same policy, which we believe is improving for all the times, and we have a total exposure of about $128 million, which is 70% of the net inflows for the next 12 months. And you can see the position of various forward covers. As we see the position as on date. With this, I will hand over to Krishna to give more updates on the business and also share the outlook for future.
Thank you, Ajay. Good evening, everybody, and then I will share the business update for the next few minutes. The first thing I want to highlight is we signed a joint venture between ourselves and Bluebird Aerosystems, effective 11th April of this year. The joint venture is 51% owned by Cyient and 49% by Bluebird. What this encompasses is the transfer of technology and manufacturing know-how from Bluebird to the joint venture, which is called CSS, or Cyient Systems and Solutions, to support the manufacturing and maintenance of UAVs for the Indian market. Specifically, why UAVs in India is because we believe that there is a significant market within various aspects, be it the military, the paramilitary, the surveillance, the police forces, and also some commercial applications. There is a significant opportunity for addressing this market. Also, as many of you know, there's not a dearth of players in the UAV space, but we believe that the solutions that that Bluebird brings, which are these three, these Skylight, Thunderbee, and Microbee, are quite unique, and some of the things that, some of the applications that they can be used in, A, are very relevant for India, for example, high altitude, or the varied conditions that across that exist across the country, or the rather long coastline that we have in the country. So for those kind of situations, the products are actually very apt and very good, and therefore we believe that there is a significant value proposition in for the Bluebird market, for the Bluebird products in the Indian market. Therefore, the JV will, after the transfer of technology, will indigenize, manufacture, integrate, test, support UAV systems. And we're in the process of building up a factory for this in Hyderabad with 100 systems a year. So it's a very small batch manufacturing because the systems are quite complicated. So that's one. The second thing I also want to update you on is the new business accelerator. We created this initiative called the new business accelerator to facilitate innovation within science, to really focus on developing new products, services, and solutions. As you know from the S3 strategy, a key tenet of the S3 strategy is to move from services to solutions, and therefore it becomes quite important for us to be able to clearly define and create these solutions. The solutions are a little bit different from just packaged services. Therefore, it becomes important to have the right ecosystem, to have the right innovation, development, framework, etc. And therefore, we created this thing called the New Business Accelerator. Where this becomes relevant is we are committing this year that about 100 basis points of revenue or margin, so about $7 million plus dollars, will go towards NBA initiative, and therefore we will call it out going forward in terms of what we spend, because it will have a material impact on the profit. But I'll explain that in a little bit more detail going forward. I also want to say the $7 million number is a combination of OPEX and CAPEX, and some of these will also be quite CAPEX intensive because of how the technology is being developed and so on and so forth. But I'll talk about it in a little bit more detail when we talk about the outlook for the year ahead. But the reason why I want to highlight this is an important initiative for the future. We are committed to about 100 basis points of revenue, or 1% of our revenue going towards this next year. And we really would get up, actually, and a lot of the impact we also started seeing in Q4, though the initiative has been in place for the last year. We saw a lot of the impact in Q4, which is one of the reasons why the operating margins were flat in spite of a very good revenue performance. In terms of the investment pipeline and focus area, nothing really changes. I'll just say, there's three deals that we closed this year. There's one in an LOI stage, which will happen at some point in the next few months. There's some corporate investment, and also nothing's really changed in terms of what the focus area for the M&A are. In terms of the industry outlook, we believe aerospace and defense is expected to grow by 10%. There's a strong demand, and for an industry like aerospace and defense, 10% is actually a very significant number. We're also seeing a lot of disruption in the supply chain of Boeing, Airbus, and also some of the other large OEMs. And therefore, we believe the market is looking quite good, which will also be good for us because that drives growth ultimately for us. In the communication sector, obviously, there's a lot of growth in traffic in terms of the amount of mobile traffic and the amount of bandwidth and data that's been consumed, and we believe that this is actually translating into some good demand for upgrading of networks and for creating various services on these networks. The utilities and geospatial market is also seeing some good traction, both because of things like electrical vehicles, which are now becoming a lot more common. The demand for electricity has improved quite a bit. Also because of the distributed energy resources, which is essentially to say that every house is a potential generating point, the grid itself has to be looked at and designed a little bit differently, because historically grids have been designed to carry electricity one way, that is from a generation point to a home, whereas now, from a generation point to a consumption point, and now you also have the ability to put power at the consumption point back into the grid. So therefore, that, along with the newer technologies, is driving a lot of business here. And we've actually put together some very interesting solutions there. For example, a solution called IDMS that's built on big data, cloud computing, and analytics. And IDMS is a good example of how digital technologies are playing out in the UPC sector. And we've actually seen some of the first wins there, which we expect to continue to translate quite well into the longer-term growth. The rail market is expected to grow 2.6%. Most of the growth will come in services, that's rail services, and also in rolling stocks, which is the train itself. We're also seeing a lot of investments here in newer and emerging technologies, because the focus is now not just on building a better asset, but maintaining it and running it more effectively, which means that people are embedding a lot more in terms of IoT and distributed computing and so on and so forth into the train itself. The oil and gas industry is also recovering, albeit it's a slowish recovery, but we see that we see a lot of opportunity in some of the areas there. The upstream, which is essentially the exploration part, is also the exploration part actually consumes a lot of capital in areas in which we can be of service. That's going on quite well. Mining is also seeing an uptick. We are seeing a lot more demand from our customers in this segment. And a lot of the projects which will go live in 2020 onwards are starting to kick off now. And given that we are in the early part of that value chain, it's good for us. Semiconductors, again, it's a great industry to be in at the moment because a lot of the new technologies, be it AI, be it the 5Gs, cloud computing, et cetera, is on a chip, and the chip doesn't work effectively and work very fast, and therefore we will continue to see some growth. Healthcare will also grow. I think we have a very targeted strategy there, which has two prongs to it. One is to service the large OEMs, which is, you know, traditional business, and we continue to do well there. But equally important is to look at the emerging low-cost healthcare market, because that's where we believe we can really make a big difference by supporting, enabling design and manufacture of low-cost devices. And the Zigbee platform that the chairman talked about a few minutes ago is to enable that, is to make sure that we create a platform into which the devices that we design and manufacture go into, and therefore hopefully have a ubiquitous market across cost-sensitive countries. I'll just take a moment to recap what happened last year from an outlook perspective. At the beginning of the year, so this is the outlook that we had suggested or that we had talked about. In terms of growth, we said double-digit growth in the core business for the services business that ended up at 12.9%. We said DLM will witness growth in the ballpark of 20%. 19% includes BMS, and in all fairness, we should take out BMS because we didn't or that wasn't anticipated at the beginning of the year. So without BMS and adjusting for the tax, because the way tax is accounted for has changed, growth has been 16.1% in BLM, which obviously is a little bit lower than expected at the beginning of the year. But again, I'm not too unhappy about where the year ended, and more importantly, you'll see when I talk about the outlook going forward. In terms of margin, we said group margin will see an improvement of between 50 and 100 bps. The actual number came in at 58 bps. So again, lower part of the range, but anyway, it's within the range. Services, we said, also would be 50 to 100. There we came in a little bit lower at 43 bps. And we said we expect to see a double-digit earning growth in FY18, and that came in at 16.1%. So net-net, we're quite pleased that we were able to foresee what happened, and we were able to deliver overall what was a very, very good year in both revenue and in terms of earnings. In the same spirit, the outlook for FY19, the revenue growth in the services business will be double-digit again. And again, obviously, we can have an endless debate on what does double digit mean, but I'd say it would be in line with what we saw this year. The legacy DLM business, which is signed DLM or the old Ronson, we expect will grow at about 20%. And again, while we were a little bit lower than that last year on an FY18, basis the pipeline, the opportunities, et cetera, I'm quite confident that it will be at least 20% this year. I'll again put a caveat there. Q4 was very strong, so Q1 will see a dip, but for the year, I'm quite confident about the 20% number. Overall, DLM will be about 35%. This includes B&F, which is the tool design, build, and manufacturing company that we acquired a few months ago. In terms of operating profit, we'll see double-digit growth in operating profit again in FY19. OPM, which is the margin itself, will be flat. We will see at least 100 bps improvement due to operational efficiency, and this will get offset by the investments that we're making in the MBA. That's why I want to be clear that while it is a significant investment, we are earning that investment in making the investment. The margin won't dip as we see it right now. In that sense, the additional gains that we get because of efficiency, we will invest in the MBA. Obviously, it also gives us a little bit of leeway in terms of how we plan those investments, because as we see better profits and improvements, we will plan those investments. DLM margin will also improve. It was 7% in operating margin, sorry, so DLM was 7% in Q4. I anticipate it will come down slightly for the year, but it will still be in low single digits from an operating margin perspective. In terms of tax, the tax rate will be lower by 200 to 300 basis points, to the point that Ajay made earlier, I think two things are happening. One is obviously the U.S. tax rate is quite beneficial, given a fair amount of our profit is also there. But also, more importantly, we've been aggressively replanning such that growth happens in the special economic zones. We see, one of the things we did is both MPH and semiconductor will have good growth in this year. And before the growth happens, we moved a lot of the competence there into a new special economic zone in Hyderabad. So net, I don't have a comment on earnings because we're still working out how some of the other things with other income, especially with the rupee, et cetera, will work out. But what I can commit is that as we see things, we will see a double-digit growth in operating profit in FY19. With that, I will wrap it here and just quickly say thank you very much for your patience and support in FY18. Obviously, we had at least what we consider a very good year. It was a year that we anticipated, and therefore I think we were able to plan well, because again, we almost added $70 million or $80 million of net new revenue, so that does take some planning for a company of our size. But we were able to anticipate, and therefore, we were able to grow in a very structured manner, which again helps with things like margin and operating profits. So thank you very much for your patience and also for your support. And I want to assure you that things look quite good for FY18 along the lines of the outlook. And I look forward to your continued support.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We have the first question from the line of Pankaj Kapoor from GM Financial. Please go ahead. We seem to have lost the line for Mr. Pankaj Kapoor. We move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Gaurav Rateria from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Question for Krishna, if you could give a color in terms of is the revenue growth in services going to be more broad-based? And do you expect, the client which was dragging growth or not growing in the aerospace to start leading growth in the vertical?
I think the growth itself will be quite broad-based. We don't see anything that is going to stand out or any business that's going to stand out. The medical business will grow at a fairly good rate just because it's a small business unit. Similarly, semiconductors. But also, when I look at some of the larger business units, we're seeing double digits from communications, for example. Aerospace will also be there or thereabouts. So I think the growth itself will be quite broad-based. We're not premising it on any specific customer growing significantly. In terms of the aerospace customer, I think at least this year we had a small dip there, but I think going forward we at least see that revenue sustaining. Sorry, there are some opportunities where we are seeing new growth coming in because various things have happened there. But we do see new growth coming in, but at least, the sustainability is there, therefore we're able to also address some new opportunities there. Again, we're not expecting any I mean, we're not, the commentary that I gave is not premised on that customer growing significantly. If that happens, that's a bonus on top. I think we're doing all the right things for that to happen.
Okay, great. Krishna, second question on where are we in this transition of from just providing design services to design and build, because the order intake number in DLM kind of doesn't reflect that. So if you could provide some color on, you know, where are we in that process, and do we expect large orders to come through over the next few quarters?
We do expect that. I think we are in the process of closing some pretty significant orders. The DLM order intake was a little bit lower this quarter because Q3 we had some good orders that will sustain us for at least this year and also going forward. But the total pipeline in DLM is about $250 million. Probability adjusted will be about 50-60% of that. So net, the pipeline is there. We will close this in the next quarter or two, but again, we're working off a very significant pipeline.
Okay, last question for Ajay. If you could provide, is there any one-off which you referred on services margins in this quarter, and or is this just a year-end phenomena? And for next year, the bulk of the investments in NBA, will that be reflected more in services, or will that be a part of the DLM margins?
First, when you look at the exit margin for services, I said while the reported number is 15.2, if you consider the one-offs, it is more like 15.7%. And as I said, you know, you always have some correction for the things like annual base commission, things like that. That's the first part. When you look at the spend that is going to be on NBA, there's a lot of focus on solutions. From the perspective of the outcome, I think it is going to be more on solutions that will encompass both services and DLM. But if you're asking from the perspective of where it will reflect, so you will take it at the group level on a SDNA basis. So we are going to carve out a investment fund, and we are going to show you separately at the corporate level in terms of that. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pankaj Kapoor from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity and good quarter. Krishna, can you give some color on the Bluebird JV that you mentioned in terms of the planned investments that you're going to do over there? I presume that is over and above the $7 million investment in the accelerator program. So what kind of a production and revenue cycle, when is that expected to start? Also, what kind of a financial impact do you see, and the expected payback period from that investment?
Pankaj, I think it's a little bit early for that. We're still, you know, the JV was formed because there are a lot of opportunities in India that we're seeing to come up. There is a number of, and actually a lot of this is obviously in the public knowledge on the various paramilitary forces and military forces that have put out or in the process of putting out RFQs or RFPs or RFQs for the UAVs. So in that context, I'd say it's a little bit early. But what I will say is that the investment will actually be relatively minimal because the factory, for example, to produce a UAV is quite is not very capital intensive. The skill that is required is actually quite unique, and therefore, you know, the people that you need are quite capable, et cetera, et cetera. So in that context, the capital investment is going to be quite limited. I think $2 million is what we're planning at most, but the payback will be quite attractive. But I'd say it is still a little bit too early to talk about the specific numbers. We believe we have a very good proposition. We're working through the details.
Sure. So this $2 million is over and above the $7 million that you are. Yeah.
And it's not capitalized. It's capex because it's, the factory will need some equipment. We will need some jigs, fixtures, toolings. Having said that, actually, a lot of the mechanics of the UAV are fairly straightforward.
the electronics will still be manufactured in Sion, for example. So it'll be quite small of an investment, and it'll be a capital investment. Because really, it's a product that's based on skill rather than on CapEx.
Sure. And if you look at the order booking that we did in the last couple of quarters, post that, do you think that there is any kind of a blind spot out there which may prevent the growth accelerating from what we did in this year?
I think not really. I mean, again, you know, the problem is with blind spots is we don't know what they are and they hit us. But as we see things, we're quite confident because the order book is quite strong. Customer connect is quite strong, and we're getting some good feedback. So as things stand, I can't, you know, to at least do the outlook that I gave, we don't see a significant risk. We see, you know, there's the usual business risks, but we believe that those are all things that we understand have been mitigated.
Sure. And Ajay, what would be the likely CapEx for FY19, including the investment, the $2 million investment in the JV, and any part of that $7 million that we might be putting under CapEx?
So the way we look at it is that, you know, one, we look at the normal CapEx, and I think that normal CapEx will be in line with what we have spent in the current year. I think we have been clocking for the last couple of years between 2.5% to 3%. That's the normal CapEx. Second, I think what investments we will make, as Krishna said, as far as this new world is concerned, I think that's an investment when you have acquisitions and all. So what we do is, when we look at these numbers, we try to look at net of these investments, so neither we take the benefits of them nor the cost. And all of them are going to be capitalized. So right now, I would say you should just consider the normal capex, and rest of it is all food bearing. So as we get the investment number in, we also get the benefits of it over the years.
Sure. And lastly, on the FY19 margin guidance that you spoke of, which will be flat YY, what kind of exchange rate assumptions that you have factored in there?
We have taken started our budgeting exercise in quarter four, early quarter four. So whatever are the existing rates, that's what we have taken at that particular time.
Okay, so hypothetically, if the rupee continues to weaken beyond 65, 65 and a half, then that could be incremental to the margins.
I think we had considered something like 64, and then of course rate for various cross currencies. That's right, you know. But you never know about currency, as Krishna said. You know, it's very difficult to base anything on the currency. So I would say whatever guidance we are giving is based on quarter four average rate. That's what we can consider.
Sure, got it. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Jain from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. So I have a couple of questions for Krishna. So Krishna, my first question is on the services order intake for this quarter. So it was a bit soft. So what was the reason for this softness, and what gives you comfort on achieving the full year growth guidance which you have for the services business?
So it's just the cyclical nature of how order intake comes in, because if you look at Q3, was actually a very, very strong quarter. It was an extraordinarily strong quarter in some ways. So just if I look at the order backlog and look at where we start, where we stand with the order backlog, which is about $400 and something million, I think, that gives me confidence. And then I look at the previous years of how things pan out, that gives me confidence. So I think the backlog is probably a better way to look at it, because Q3 was actually a very strong quarter.
Yeah, because I look at the LTM numbers. So even on LTM basis, this number looks quite soft. So that was the reason I asked this question.
If I may just add to what Krishna said, if you look at the two ways of looking at it, typically if you see that, you know, at any time we have a backlog of about 6 to 7 months, so that parameter would be enhanced, you know, forward-looking revenue target is in place. There is no such decline. If you look at full year order intake to full year order intake, that's quite in the similar ranges. And also if you look at the overall pipeline, that is the highest ever. And, you know, we do have more than $1 billion of pipeline, and when you adjust it for
probabilities. This is how we look at our business. So when we are giving this guidance, we have already taken into consideration the order intake, the backlog in the pipeline.
Okay, understood. And the second question on the services business, on the margins, so what are your aspirations for in the next 2-3 years? So currently you are around 16% level, and for the next year you are guiding a flat margin trajectory. But for the next, if you look at for the next 2-3 years, can this go up to 17% or more, or 16% is the level where you try to keep it?
See, I think it depends. I mean, the potential absolutely exists, because if you look at it this year also, we will see, you know, a lot of things that we are doing will pan out over a period of time. Therefore, even this year, say the potential to increase margin absolutely exists. But because of the opportunity that also exists, and there's some real opportunity. I mean, it's also not investing for the very future, etc. You know, there are certain solutions that we're in the process of developing where we see a market, where we see a customer, etc. So that, taking that into account, we chose that, you know, that 100 basis points which we will get because of operational efficiency, we will put it back into building these capabilities, because the growth acceleration at that point can be very significant. So I say we have to look at the margin from that context going forward. What are the growth opportunities that we have? I mean, if we had to sort of, you know, if we had to grow margin by 100 or 200 basis points, it's absolutely there. But then we have to cut investments. And at this point, at least the way I look at it, if we make those investments now, the acceleration of growth in FY 2020, we see that there is a significant opportunity. That's why they're making the investments now.
Right. And in which areas are, so which segments are you making these investments?
I think there's two buckets that the investments are being made. One is, I'll say, in the emerging technology. So there's, for example, there's a lot of work that's being done in machine learning. Like, again, machine learning in areas of interest to us. So, for example, for the geospatial business, machine learning from extrapolating features from a map automatically, which will bring in a significant amount of efficiency and automation. Or if you look at the aerospace business, there's machine learning for some very specific applications in aerospace. So that's one step. IoT is another thing. So these are the emerging technologies that we are working on for certain areas. The second set is products. Now, again, these are not products in the sense that they're not necessarily science-branded consumer products, but these are products where, you know, at a subsystem level or an assembly level or a core system level, we are able to actually completely design and own a subsystem. There's a few of those examples that we're working on there. Again, our subsystem will plug into a larger system that the OEM will set. But we have built the capability of doing the entire design. We own the IP, we'll do the manufacturing, et cetera. So these are the two buckets into which the investments are going. One is subsystems, or complete subsystems, and the second is emerging technology.
Okay. So the second component of that is subsystems. This will be part of DLM, right? Or
some of it will be DLM, but a lot of the value capture will still happen in science, because it is design and then manufacture. And the value capture happens in the design phase, because that's where you have the intellectual property and so on and so forth. So therefore, it's really it will reside in science still, because that's where a lot of the value capture is. The execution, which is the manufacturing, might be done in DLM, but again, the idea is we won't do manufacturing without owning the intellectual property which is captured in science.
Understood. That's it from my
side.
Thank you.
Before we take the next question, we'd like to inform participants that in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants in the conference, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. We take the next question from the line of Prakash Chellam from Marathon Edge.
Good evening, Krishna, Jay. Congratulations on a great set of results. Two questions I had. One for Krishna. Could you just give us some color? You had fantastic growth on your transportation unit. Could you just give us some color as to how much of this came from your top line there vis-a-vis the rest? Is it spread out, diversified? And the second question was for Ajay. The free cash flow conversion, which is something you're doing really well on, seems to have fallen off a little bit. From free cash flow to EBITDA percentage conversion, could you just comment on that? And specifically there, could you just comment on how long more do you see free cash flow negative sort of situation for the DLM portion of the business? Thank you.
To Prakash, I think on the first part, a lot of the growth did come from our large customers, but it was also quite broad-based. I mean, we have basically the five customers there, given that it is a concentrated industry. And I think four of the five grew in double digits. So, of course, but with the largest growth in double digits, the effect is disproportionate. But it's been quite broad-based. And going forward, we see that will continue. Actually, you know, our largest customers become quite large, so it slow down a little bit, but we also have one or two other opportunities that are going to more than make up for it. On the cash flow, I'll let Ajay.
Yeah, Prakash. On the free cash flow, I would say that, you know, for us, our business, the free cash flow for services business, typically we are targeting about 40 to 50%. Now, let me explain to you what happened in the previous year. We were at a DSO of about 100 days, and over a period of time, it has come somewhere between 75 and 80 days. When you look at last year, for example, we had a significant drop in DSO by about 6 days. That gives you extra conversion of about 5 to 10%. So when we have already reached a particular level of 75-80, I think the conversion that we can target is about 45 to 50%. So we are very confident that, you know, with this reduction now sustaining the DSO between 75 and 80, and of course some of the other drivers in terms of the SEV and other things we have a handle. So I would say that, you know, internally I feel satisfied that we have done 45% free cash flow in services. And we will continue to target 40 to 50%. And growth is another area that, you know, if you have higher growth, the working capital consumption is higher, which happened in case of DLM. Coming to DLM, I think we are working on making sure that first that we generate the positive EBITDA. And then over a period of time, we will also get a conversion like 40% of EBITDA to free cash flow in DLM. And maybe next year, we are targeting something like break even for the next year.
So the next 1 year, you anticipate that DLM would be free cash flow negative. Could I assume that will be approximately the same order of magnitude which is there today, or do you think it will be a little bit more than?
For full year, we can expect a break even, but since you have seen there is a cyclicity there, so in the quarters where you have growth, you will see the working capital consumption and thereby a negative free cash flow, and other quarters positive. Overall, we expect a break even at free cash flow level in the next year.
Okay, so you're saying FY19, you anticipate that overall for the year, DLM business could become free cash flow break-even. So. Great. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Urmil Shah from IDBI Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Congrats on a strong quarter. Krishna, just wanted more clarity on the new business accelerator program. You know, you have mentioned that over the long term, 10 to 15% of incremental earnings. But do we have a plan in place or the target as to how much of our revenue, say, in the next 2 to 3 years, should be coming from this program-led initiatives?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have a plan on how it will evolve, because ultimately, like I said, you know, the key is for us to move away from just being services to solutions. So there's a clear target, and there's some KRAs that are set around those targets for this year. And we will continue to do that. Therefore, you know, while there's a clear investment plan, there's also a pretty clear revenue plan, because for something to get funded through the NDA, there is a process that is followed. And one of the key elements of the process is a business case, wherein we have a clear anticipation of what is the revenue that we're going to generate out of a particular business. Because, again, a lot of these are, you know, they're application of technology, they're not new research, for example. So, therefore, there has to be a clear business case in terms of how we monetize that solution or that intellectual property. So, there's a clear plan, both in terms of revenue and also, obviously, cost, but more importantly, in terms of revenue.
Secondly, in FY18, you know, communication and transportation offset the softness in aerospace and defense. For a double-digit growth in FY19 and beyond, you said medical and semiconductors could go faster, but relatively smaller verticals. So, which are the verticals you still think can, not just for 1 year, for a couple of years, can still grow at double digits?
Yeah, I think, and the comment I made on medical and semiconductor was the growth rates will be much higher, but of course they're smaller piece. So far, as I said, I think still we see communications will continue to be a growth driver. We're seeing a lot of opportunities there. We're seeing that the aerospace and defense is also coming back quite a bit because of the new pipeline, new customers that we've added. We've rejigged a lot of the sales team there. We've invested a lot in competency. So we believe that both A&D and comms will also have a good year. Now, comms this year, I think, ended up at about a 24%, 25%, something like that. And next year, it will be a little bit lower, but it will still be, it won't be double digits. There won't be one in front of a double digit, let me put it that way.
Got it. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek S. from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Just a quick question on margins. So, just trying to understand the maths here. Are you guys building in a flat margins for services business next year outside of currency?
Yes, we are. Yes.
Okay, and just a follow-up on that, is there any particular reason to say so, or are there any headwinds that you are foreseeing in the next couple of quarters? Thanks for taking my question.
Let me just again clarify. See, what we are saying is the overall group margin is going to be flat. Now that the major portion of revenue, almost 90% is from services, it is very fair, and the margin of VLM is improving to assume that the services margin is flat. But I think we are expecting that overall, in terms of the margin, it will improve by 100 basis points.
Right.
And then we will invest in investment. Some of it could be capex also. To that extent, it will not fit the P&L. So let me again clarify, we will have the wage headwind. We are confident that the operational improvements are going to be such that we will improve, despite the wage hike, the services margin by 100 basis points. And then you have the investments, and net you get the flag.
That's helpful. Thank you for taking my question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mohit Jain from Anand Rathi. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Just one clarification on the same thing for FY19. What you are saying is that 2.5% of revenues is normal capex. And then we should add this 9 million additional capex for the investments that you're talking about. And apart from that, 1% of revenue will go through P&L. Is that the right understanding? Or 1% includes this 9 million of investment that you're talking about?
Let me just clarify. What you are saying is that in terms of capex, that's a normal capex in line with the last year normal capex. So, for example, when you look at our free cash flow also, there is a normal capex which is before the free cash flow from the operations, right? That has been historically between 2.5% to 3%, and we said that normal capex is going to be 2.5% to 3%. Now, in terms of the investment in NBA, we said they will be up to 1%. These are investments over and above this capex, and most of it will hit the P&L, but some of it will also be capex, right?
So, 1% is the total of capex plus opex investment.
No, let me again say 1% of revenue, which is over and about 2.5% to 3% of normal capex,
right,
is going to be the is going to be opex plus capex, and whatever is the opex portion will hit the P&L, which could be majority of it. Maybe let's say about 2/3 of it or 3/4 of it is going to be opex. We don't know the details, but I'm just saying for your broad understanding, this will be the impact.
Understood. Second is there any investment which was done in fourth quarter because there was some increase in capex?
So I think it will this year you have to look at it in the whole year perspective. I think
there's no back-ended, a lot of
facilities that we made talked about for the special economic zones, I think a lot of spending has taken place in this part. So it's all good system, and as Krishna said, it's all cyclic.
Nothing, so. Nothing related to the JV or to the accelerator program.
No, no, nothing.
That's all showing up when you look at our free cash flow, that's showing up in the investment.
Well, actually, that was the next one. Your cash flow from operations was weak this time. See, we had this double digit EBITDA growth, but cash flow from operations was quite weak for FY18.
That's true.
Cash flow from operations only, if you remove the
debit, just look. Free cash flow from operations, again, I clarified that, you know, we have seen very handsome growth in this particular year. We have also seen that, you know, year on year, our DSO has reduced. There is no headwind on capex. There was a slight headwind on the tax this year, but we already said that's behind us. So I would say on free cash flow, there is no concern. And overall, I think we are at 45% conversion. Also, the, now that we are going in detail, we also have this impact of the foreign exchange fluctuation on 31st March, where our receivables were restated to the extent of about 20-23 crores, which should, you know, so I think that honestly, we are internally not at all worried on free cash flow. We are on the right track. We have delivered a good conversion of about 50%. We will continue to do that. And DLM, you know, is already going to break even both on EBITDA side and free cash flow side. Worst is behind us.
Sir, this change in receivables, if you restate it as of 31st March, that will also impact your cash flow from operations?
That's right. Because you take the rupee number of receivables between 31st March 2017 and 31st March 2018. It does.
The actual cash transaction has not happened. It's just a restatement, right?
No, 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 but in our case for the receivables, so why don't we take it offline? The fact is that whatever is the restatement is, you know, the way we look at the free cash flow is the change in the receivables in absolute INR number.
Okay, we'll take it offline, sir. Thank you.
Yes. It will show up in the working capital change. Definitely.
And also, just the foreign cash will have to be reset. GDP zero, all those
due to time constraints, we'll be able to take one last question. The last question is from the line of Madhu Babu from Prabhudas Lilladher. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir, I just want some view on some of the verticals like semiconductor, off-highway and medical. So all the three segments currently are subscale. So how do we see scalability here? I mean, would you look at big-time acquisitions there?
That's part of it, but I think we're also seeing some traction in terms of customers. And I think each one of the businesses has a different strategy. Medical is quite bullish on design to build. So the design and build manufacturing is a part of it. So we're seeing some very strong traction there. So I think a lot of that growth will be internal, but we're also looking at a potential acquisition. Semiconductor is also in a similar situation. Suppose the strategy is different, but a lot of the emerging technologies fall there. So semiconductor is also trying to beef up both internally and externally. Off-highway equipment, I'd say, is, you know, we'll do that internally. We have some good customers and we're seeing traction there. So it's a bit of both. I think both semiconductor and medical especially are very, very important for the long-term growth. Because those are emerging areas and we see some very strong traction there. Off-highway and industrial is core to us. It's a part of what we do very, very well, mechanical engineering, centric engineering. So I think we will continue to scale there. So while they are subscale, I think we are seeing some very good traction there.
And sir, one more thing on this new business initiative. So is it client pull or how are we going to develop something and then if at all we develop and then how is the sales cycle and how do you approach a client? Because that looks a bit, that would you have to put additional sales investments for selling those IPs or products?
No, it's a convergence of client pull and what we see as the opportunity in the market. So ultimately, we don't want to go to different type of clients. We don't want to sell different type of services. We don't want to open up new fronts in terms of different verticals. So in that construct, this is really the whole premise of our strategy, if you look at it, is built on expansion in terms of the wallet share, in terms of the capability and the value chain, not expansion in terms of getting more customers or new markets. In that construct, if you look at where we are making the investments, we are triangulating between what the market wants, what the customer wants, and what we are capable of delivering. And a lot of it will be to existing customers, those to new service. And therefore, we believe the existing sales force, et cetera, of course, has to scale, has to be trained, we'll need to bring in new people. But we're not going to come back and say, now we have to make sales investments which are different than what we talked about.
So just one last one from my side. Now, sir, the way the business is transforming more into like manufacturing, you're putting the JV, a lot of on-site centers have been put up in for aerospace as well as, you know, other verticals. So would we say that 14% is a new margin target for the company overall? I mean, that earlier margin was at a different profile of the business. Now with business moving more to end-to-end, so 14% margin would be the new normal. Can we imply that?
I said for the year, because I think once things stabilize and scale starts coming up, we'll reset it. But I think for the year, 14% is the
target. Okay, sir. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take that as last question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Sandeep Agarwal for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for participating in the call. I'll hand over the call to Mr. Reddy for his final remarks. Over to you, Mr. Reddy.
Thank you, Sandeep. I just want to take this opportunity again to thank all our investors, all the analysts, who continuously track our company, participate in various discussions with us, spending time with us. We appreciate all that you do for us. A big thank you. The leadership team led by Krishna, Ajay, and others have committed to you during the financial year 17-18, they delivered. So trust in us and we will deliver what we tell you. As a last comment, we also are going to have our investor day on 4th of May. This is an initiative which got started off by Ajay Agarwal. This is the seventh time we're doing it in the company. We'll showcase some of our customers, some of our capabilities, answer some of your questions. Some of you still have some questions to be answered by Ajay. Ajay said we'll take it offline. But I think great opportunity to come and see what we're doing here. So we welcome all of you to come to Hyderabad for the Investor Day on the 4th of May. Thank you again for your participation. Thank you, Sandeep.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Edelweiss Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You can ask.
Krishna, congratulations.